This is Barbara Ridenour, returning with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated November 6, 2015. We'll continue with the obituaries. Merle Ridlin, age 90, died Wednesday, November 4, 2015. Funeral services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, November 7th, at Brintlinger and Earl Funeral Home, Decatur, with visitation 1 hour prior to service at the funeral home. Private burial will be in Macon Cemetery in Macon. Memorials may be made to the First Church of the Nazarene. Tamara Sue Tammy Bray, 62, of Kenny, died November 1, 2015. Visitation was held from 5 to 7 p.m. Wednesday, November 4th, at Holland Berry and Bennett Funeral Home in Lincoln. Funeral services were at 11 a.m. Thursday, November 5th, at Open Arms Christian Fellowship, Lincoln. In lieu of flowers, memorial donations may be made to Open Arms Christian Fellowship and will be accepted at the funeral home. Shirley Marie Merrill, 53, of Decatur, died on November 3, 2015. Services will be at 10 a.m. Monday, November 9th, at the Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton. Burial will follow at the Memorial Park Cemetery in Clinton. Visitation will be from 4 to 6 p.m. Sunday, November 8th, at Calvert Funeral Home, Clinton. Memorials may be made to the New Life Pregnancy Center in Decatur. Ronald K. Bechtel, 73, of Decatur, died Wednesday, November 4th, 2015. Services will be held at 12 p.m. Saturday, November 7th, at Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home. Visitation will be from 10 a.m. to 12 p.m. Saturday, November 7th, at the funeral home. Burial will be in Graceland Cemetery. Memorials in memory of Ronald may be made to the Warrensburg Sportsman's Club. Susan McHenry Hilton, 73, of Decatur, died Tuesday, November 3rd, 2015. Services to celebrate her life will be held at a later date in California. Graceland Fairlawn Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. Robert I. Corman, 81, of Monticello, formerly of Hammond, Illinois, died Wednesday, November 4, 2015. Private family graveside services will be held at the Hammond Cemetery in Hammond, Illinois. Public visitation will be held from 4 to 7 p.m. Sunday, November 7th, at the Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home in Atwood. Memorials are suggested to the Hammond United Methodist Church or Kirby Medical Center, Monticello. Betty Farley Floger, 85, of Monticello, died October 24, 2015. A memorial service will be held at 10 a.m. Saturday, November 14th, at the Chapel of St. John in Champaign. A small reception will follow the services. Mackie Wright Funeral Home are in charge of services. Now we'll turn to the opinion page and continue with letters to the editor. Rezoning ban needed in viable neighborhoods. I thank all persons who expressed no to the rezoning of the property at the southwest corner of U.S. Business 51 and Ash Avenue. The letters to the editor by Mackie Spurlock and Edward Dawson, published on October 11th and 15th respectively, against the rezoning proposal were good. I particularly thank the public officials who cast public no votes on the issue, Jack Myatt and Bruce Franz, as members of the Decatur Plan Commission, and Decatur City Council member Jerry Dawson, Pat McDaniel, Bill Faber, and Lisa Gregory. Those public votes were courageous. All the no expressed is a benefit to the City of Decatur. All of you should receive a thumbs up. Why? All of you prevented the premature deterioration of a good residential neighborhood from being added to the abundant inventory of deteriorated/deteriorating residential areas that exist within the City of Decatur. It may have also kept another commercially zoned property from being added to the list of the abundant inventory of non-used commercial property that exists. Going forward, it would behoove the City of Decatur and the Decatur Plan Commission right now to adopt the position that all good and viable residential areas will not be subjected to rezoning for commercial purposes until the abundant inventory of non-used commercial properties is reduced by at least 80% of the total square footage of the inventory that existed October 20th. The good and viable residential area along the west and west of U.S. Business 51 should be specified as being exempt from any rezoning. Retail commercial development is to be allowed only in the areas already classified as commercial zones and the residential zones that have deteriorated or are in deterioration. Signed, Homer Leotius, Decatur. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Thumbs up to the grand opening of Convey Health Solutions, which officially opened last week. The health-oriented call center will soon have 300 employees answering calls, and that number will grow to 500 by this time next year. David Starr, Convey Executive Vice President, said the company selected Decatur partially because of support from the community. Thumbs up to the Decatur Public Schools Foundation Legacy of Learning, which will be held this year at MacArthur High School. The annual event, which is now November 14th, honors outstanding graduates of Decatur Public Schools. But this is the first year it has been held at one of the schools, and it's an excellent time to showcase one of the district's new additions. Honorees this year will include MacArthur graduates Richard Maxwell and Cindy Dedrick Wolfer. Also set to be honored is Lieutenant Lauren Douglas Hagen, a MacArthur graduate who died in Vietnam and was a recipient of the Medal of Honor. Thumbs down to the Decatur Public Library Board, which obviously violated at least the spirit and most likely the letter of the law when it held a closed session to discuss a letter to be sent to Mayor Julie Moore Wolf. The exemptions for closed public meetings are fairly specific. A tape of the closed session revealed that the board stretched those limits past the breaking point. To make matters worse, what happened behind closed doors could have easily been discussed in public. Thumbs up to the coalition of neighborhood organizations, volunteers, who were honored during a recent event. Volunteers from each of the neighborhood organizations were honored. What was striking about the efforts by the volunteers is their commitment to do whatever is necessary to make the neighborhood work. Those activities range from baking cookies to mowing lawns to helping out at concession stands. Their efforts are all appreciated. Thumbs up to MacArthur High School for putting together a different look for parent-teacher conferences This year, the high school arranged the conferences so parents could meet with all of the students' teachers at one time, making for better communication and a more efficient process. In addition, the school's orchestra, band, and choir took turns entertaining parents who were waiting for a meeting or simply wanted to enjoy some music. Now we'll turn to the life section. Kablooey Improv Group opens new spot. Improvisational comedy gained what may be its most widespread popularity with television shows and live experiences like Whose Life Is It Anyway? Whose Line Is It Anyway? Now there's an opportunity for the Decatur community to try it out. Jason Albright and the Kablooey Group present improv games and stuff from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Friday, November 13th in Loft 125 in the Madden Arts Center's new entertainment venue. Tickets are $10. The show's format was created to include the audience into the performance. It is not designed to be performing improv or sketch comedy, Albright said. It is designed to be real easygoing and low pressure. Four performers will guide the crowd through games similar to audience participation skits seen on improv stages. It's going to be the audience dictating how it goes, Albright said. Members of the Kablooey Group have been performing together in various venues over the last 15 years. They have experiences in musicals as well as comedies, but the Kablooey Group is fresh, Albright said. The group began the project to try new improv games, but They and the audience needed to be as comfortable as possible. We don't want anyone to feel the pressure, Albright said. The audience is invited to bring ideas and props to the evening event. The Kablooey group will provide other items as well. Improv games and stuff is the debut of Loft 125. The Decatur Arts Area Arts Council transformed the third floor of the Madden Arts Center into a lounge-style entertainment environment, creating the new venue. We were hearing people were wanting something where they can sit back, said Sue Powell, Decatur Area Arts Council Gallery Director, a casual kind of atmosphere. Future events will have a laid-back, relaxed atmosphere, including games and music. The Arts Council is piloting four different shows for the 2015-2016 season, beginning with improv games and stuff. Participants are allowed to bring their own beverages while they snack on complimentary popcorn. Improv-inspired food will be available for purchase during this event. This is designed to make an evening affordable for everyone. Albright and the Kablooey group will keep the atmosphere easygoing. The games are designed to be fun and spontaneous, but we don't expect people to be raring to go right off the bat, he said. The spotlight is not on you, and we are working for a common goal. Lincoln Theater Broadway Show Customized for Decatur. Broadway will be invading downtown Decatur, and many in the community are happy about it. Broadway to Downtown Decatur, featuring the Unexpected Boys, will be at 7:30 p.m. Saturday, November 7th, at the Lincoln Square Theater. The show centers on the music of the Four Seasons and features pieces from Phantom of the Opera, Les Miserables, and other Broadway productions. The Unexpected Boys are a Broadway quartet of singers and entertainers. The show will also have live musicians and incorporate theatrical lights and sounds. It is something you would see if you were on Broadway, said Julie Hovis, Investment Planners Director of Marketing and Events. Hovis wanted to bring this production to Decatur because of her company's connection with the group. She met the lead performer, Brian Noonan, during other promotional shows. He loved Decatur, said David Koshinsky, president of Investment Planners. He wants to help revitalize the area. Noonan and his group will customize many of the songs for Decatur. The show will include storylines connecting the songs, some of which Brian is tailoring to Decatur, Koshinsky said. Radio personality Brian Byers will be the master of ceremonies for the evening. Decatur Mayor Julie Moore Wolf will give a welcome speech. Downtown is so beautiful now, it's time to utilize it, Koshinsky said. This should be more routine than the exception. The evening will begin at 7 p.m. with speed painter Carl Gendry. The artist will create three paintings on large canvases shortly before the event to be auctioned off after the show. Proceeds from each piece will go towards the Decatur Christian School, Decatur Area Arts Council, and the Lincoln Theater. He paints fairly quick, about one painting every 10 minutes, Hovis said. It will be a surprise. No one will know what it will be until it's finished. Several local restaurants will donate a portion of their proceeds for those who eat before the show to Decatur Christian School. Doherty's, Taproot, Gin Mill, and Fuji Steakhouse are a few of the restaurants donating to the event. To keep the local feel, young performers from the community will be on stage with the Unexpected Boys. According to Hovis, the show is designed to bring the community back to downtown. A lot of people don't have the funds to hop on a plane to New York, she said, and a lot of people will be moving around downtown, she said. Tim Kaine's column, Audience Undeserving of Contempt. After years of attending live performances, my single pet peeve has finally become clear. Performers who have contempt for their audience deserve nothing more than contempt. Some performers, to be sure, make it a part of their act to be at least some degree of hostile to at least some degree of hostile toward their audience. Veteran insult comedian Don Rickles is the longest lived and probably the most recognizable. Even if you wish he wouldn't apologize at the end of his shows into his late 80s, he maintains a biting edge. Other performers have at different times made that contempt their stock in trade. Elvis Costello is now a grand old man of pop music, collaborating with such diverse acts as George Jones, Paul McCartney, Tony Bennett, the Brodsky String Quartet, and Burt Bacharach. He's decades removed from the man who played short, rapid, amphetamine-fueled shows. To clear halls, Costello and his crew were known to deliberately turn up amplifiers so feedback would overwhelm the audience and send them scrambling to the exits. Costello has since written his history to claim that he and his band members were inspiring outrage in their crowds. They were offstage laughing at what they'd perpetrated. But in the case of both Rickles and Costello, their tendencies toward audience abuses were general knowledge. Sure, a few paying customers were likely taken aback by a 35-minute Elvis Costello show followed by screeching whines of overload electrical equipment, but even more knew that they were paying their money and taking their chances. My first time seeing Costello was a delight, as he charged through a 70-minute set sincerely, without incident, to my great surprise. A few years later, seeing him losing his temper with stagehands and his sound crew allowed me to experience both sides of his stage volatility. My experience says the performers most likely to lose their patience and temper with an audience are comedians. Comedy isn't the greatest life in show business, and we know the names of performers playing theaters and arenas. George Wallace played Champaign's Virginia Theater, and Paula Poundstone and Bill Maher play the venue tonight and Saturday. Jeff Dunham, Lewis Black, and Ryan Regan appear regularly within driving distance. All play to hundreds of fans. But there are levels of comedy and attracting attention. There are levels of comedy, and attracting attention can be difficult. Attending a club in suburban Chicago or St. Louis and being part of a crowd, you can easily count between sips of your drink can be a fantastic intimate experience, or it can be a wildly uncomfortable visit to the deep insecurities and anger of a performer struggling to build or continue career, or even deciding if they want to continue doing what they're doing. In those cases, a bit of combative attitude toward the audience is understandable. It can be uncomfortable, but generally in the seats, you're in a safe zone. For me, the point when the line gets crossed is when the audience becomes a target. It is not unreasonable to say no audience size is enough for most performers. They don't see the people in the crowd. They see the empty seats. They don't notice the audience members paying rapt attention. They see people walking out, and they especially notice people not returning. That's part of the exchange. Most artists want more attention. Most will never receive as much as they want or feel they deserve. But there's a line some cross. One comment about the paucity of the crowd is fine. A very few can turn the topic into a hilarious running bit. In a sparsely attended show last year in Peoria, comedian Andy Kindler turned the crowd size into a musical as he sang every excuse given him by fans and club employees about why there were more empty seats than preferable. But in Kindler's case, he was the subject of the mocking. He was joking, sadly perhaps, but joking nevertheless, about his inability to attract customers. In the most despicable of cases, the audience is the incessant subject of mocking. Fortunately, it occurs seldom enough that the times it does happen are easily locked into memory. In each instance, as the person on stage berated us in the audience, our friends, our geographical area, and questioned the intelligence level of anyone within driving distance, my mind returned to one thought. We're here. What are you telling us for? Your complaint is not our fault, nor our problem. Of course, were my convictions as strong as desired, the performer would have heard that to his or her face, rather than you reading it here. But contempt from a performer for an audience sometimes causes a backlash step. Dear Abby, I am a 20-year-old woman, A few months ago, my boyfriend, my very first boyfriend, committed suicide. I feel absolutely destroyed. The problem is my family doesn't regard my feelings of grief seriously because our relationship was started and maintained online. We lived several states apart, and while we never met in person, we talked every night and video chatted many, many times. My feelings for him were real. I broke down when I heard the news, and I still hurt. But my family thinks I'm overreacting. They can't understand how a relationship with someone online can be serious. How can I make them recognize how much pain I'm in? The fact that they refuse to recognize this loss hurts me so much more. What do I do? Signed, All Alone in Louisiana. Dear All Alone, please accept my sympathy for the loss of someone you cared about so deeply. That your parents would minimize your feelings is sad, but it says more about them and their level of sensitivity than the depth of your relationship with him. Many serious relationships have started online, and marriages as well, and I understand you are left mourning all the things that might have been. At 20, you are no longer a child. You can find emotional support elsewhere. Talk to your clergy person, if you have one, or look online for a grief support group you can join. There, you will be able to safely vent about your feelings with others who understand what you are experiencing right now. Bad Dad. Dear Abby, my parents divorced 4 years ago. Mom currently lives with my husband and me. We have a great relationship with her, and she never speaks ill of my father. She has moved on, found a new direction in life, and a new boyfriend we all like very much. Dad moved in with the woman he cheated on Mom with, but their relationship fell apart. He's never stopped speaking ill of Mom. When things aren't going well for him, he causes trouble by showing up at Mom's workplace or making a scene. He'll also come over to our house unannounced to talk badly about her. He was a great father until a few years ago when all this trouble started. I feel torn between trying to continue a relationship with him or cutting him out of my life like a bad daughter. What do I do? Caught in the middle in California. Dear Caught, your father's behavior is sick. Depending on how disruptive he is when he shows up at your mother's workplace, suggest she consider getting a restraining order preventing him from acting out that way. She must have a very understandable employer to have tolerated it, because that kind of disruption has been known to cost people their jobs. And when your dad shows up at your home unannounced, speak up. Tell him you and your husband don't like it. Make it clear that his nasty comments about your mother aren't welcome, and neither will he be, unless he calls first to see if a visit is all right with everyone. His misbehavior continues because you have allowed it. Richland performing socially relevant play. Decatur. So, what does one expect from the Vagina Monologues? It's a question director Michelle Stevens knows people will ask when they see signs for the nearly 20-year-old play, as her cast for a one-weekend run at the Schilling Auditorium at Richland Community College, as her cast prepares. While there is no easy answer, Stevens said it's a chance to take audience members to new places and to open them to new things and ways to look at societal and cultural issues. You're taken to places where you can feel really challenged, but you can laugh and you can commiserate, she said. The production, written by Eve Ensler, was first performed in 1996, lives up to the latter part of the title, as cast members take turns sharing moments and memories that range from heartbreaking to thought-provoking to humorous, about topics ranging from the female body and cultural issues of the 21st century. Monologues are taken from actual interviews and conversations Ensler had with women across the world. In addition to the monologues seen in various productions, Richland cast members have taken their time to write several of their own, which will be done in the second half of the production. The additions are in part to address things that have changed since Ensler first wrote the production. It includes a monologue on male body shaming and a quirky one youthful ignorance of the female body. We wanted to address some other issues that really fit into this wheelhouse, but may not have been as relevant when Ensler first started, Stephen said. Among the monologues prepared for the titled Act Two is, that's Act T-O-O, is one that deals with identity, co-written by two cast members. Though the details on the monologue are being kept secret until the night of the show, writer Haley Schaefer said it comes from a personal place. We wrote something from our perspective that we want to see in other plays, Schaefer said. To perform it in front of people is going to be real stressful, but an exciting moment. For other performers like Megan Bresnan, the show gives them a chance to try something challenging and to bring a topic to the open that is usually discussed in private. The message in her monologue and others is also seen by Bresnan as a chance to highlight positives in a sometimes negative society. It's woman positive, but it's also body positive in a time I think it's really important, she said. One other change from the initial production is the inclusion of monologues from two male cast members. While the monologues make up a smaller part of the show, Stephen said she felt it was important to show women are not the only ones who can have a difficult time with body or sexual issues. Even as the production nears its 20th year, it shows no sign of slowing down, with new performances happening annually around the world. Its lasting power speaks towards its ability to reflect the current cultural climate, Stephen said. It exists for the culture that needs and wants and once it no longer does, then people will stop doing it, she said. The fact that it's still done hundreds of times every year speaks to that. Some part of society really feels the message is still in here, still matter. Okay. If you go, it's the Vagina Monologues at 7:30 today and Saturday through... Today and Saturday, November 5th through the 7th, 3 p.m. Sunday, November 8th. It's at Schilling Auditorium at Richland Community College. Tickets are $10 for general admission or $7 for students, seniors, and alumni. And here are some coming events. Forsyth Veterans Day Program. The Village of Forsyth will host a Veterans Day program at 11 a.m. Wednesday, November 11th, in the Forsyth Park. Ed Culp, Decatur Park District Chief Ranger, will be the featured speaker. Decatur Downtown Cafe Veterans. Veterans are invited for a free breakfast from 6:30 to 10 a.m. Wednesday, November 11th, in the Downtown Cafe, 857 West McKinley Avenue. The event is sponsored by Eagle Ridge. Clinton, DAR Veterans Breakfast. The DeWitt Clinton Chapter of National Society of Daughters of the American Revolution will sponsor a free Veterans Breakfast at 9 a.m. Wednesday, November 11th, in the American Legion, 219 North Elizabeth Street, Clinton. Submarine in Vietnam will be presented by Samuel L. Eddy. Spouses are welcome. Bement. School Veterans Program. A Veterans Day program will be from 10 to 10:45 a.m. Wednesday, November 11th in Bement High School, 201 South Champaign Street. Veterans may submit a picture for slideshow by email to ltaylor@bement.k.12.il.us or deliver to the high school office. A chili lunch will follow at the American Legion in 449 East Bowyer Street. That's all we have time for today's edition of the Decatur Herald and Review, dated November 6th, 2015. This is Barbara Ridenour. I look forward to reading with you again soon. Have a pleasant weekend and week to follow.